All right. We got episode 501. Episode 501. 501 episodes today. Wow. Feels like I just started last week recording this podcast. But today we're going to start a new format. You guys know Brett Brown. If you've been listening to me for some time, he's been on the show quite a few times. Brett, what's going on, my dude?
Hey, I'm back.
How's it going? So for those that don't know who Brett Brown is, Brett Brown is my Yoda in real life. Him and his wife run a boutique agent. Well, I wouldn't say agency, if you will, a firm called Blazing Glory, and they've been in the branding space, advertising space forever. I feel like you graduated high school and like you became a branding guru.
Well, that's the nice thing about starting young is you get all your mistakes out of the way.
Yeah.
real, you know, you make a lot of them, but the good news is you make a lot of them quickly.
Right. So you're not an old fogey like me trying to fumble his way through life and through business. I'm learning from the youngins, guys. I'm learning from the youngins. So a little bit of different format. I'm going to rock this out with Brett for a few weeks, I think, because I really enjoy the podcast formats where it's very conversational. It's not super structured. And you guys get to tune into a conversation that we typically have every Friday. So every Friday for the past like 3.5 years, I've been meeting with Brett, like a virtual type of coffee type of thing where, you know, we just literally shoot the branding shit for an hour, hour and a half every Friday. And I'm constantly learning from you, dude. So I was like, you know what? We're just going to turn today's session into a podcast and let the audience in on what we typically talk about. So one of the things that I've been consuming over the past couple of weeks is this book called Unreasonable Hospitality. And I heard about this book through one of my favorite comedians, Sebastian Maniscalco. He was talking about it on his podcast. And the author is a guy by the name of Will Gadara. And he runs a very successful restaurant group in New York City. And I believe he manages or partners. I'm pretty sure he's partner with one of the best restaurants in New York City and the world called 11 Madison Park. And in this book, he talks about what unreasonable hospitality is and how he's been able to get, you know, 4-star reviews from the New York Times and how he's implemented this concept into this restaurant, which blew them out of the park, you know, as far as competition goes, as far as, how they stand out. And it's just amazing. Have you ever been to a 4-star restaurant before?
I guess so. Yeah. I've been to a couple of like, Michelin starred ones. I don't know. Yeah.
The different star levels, again, I'm no connoisseur here, but, yeah. The more stars you get, the more of an experience you can anticipate.
I always sort my Yelp searches by star.
So I mean, the experiences that you receive in these types of establishments is just insane. I remember me and my wife, before our son was born, we were out. We spent one of our anniversaries. I forget which one it was. And we did Santa Margherita, Italy for a few days. We walked to Portofino, which is not that big of a walk. It was like 40 minutes. And then we spent the last couple of days in Milan, and she picked this restaurant Croco, in Milan for the last day's dinner. And that was a 3-star Michelin. Mm. And Brett, when I tell you it was like hilarious. The experience we had. So long story short, I'll cut to the chase. We're literally sitting at the table. It's like seven courses, right? We're there for 3 hours. I got to go to the bathroom. I got to go to the bathroom bad. So I asked the waiter, I'm like, where's the bathroom? And he was like, oh, follow me. So he like ushers me to this elevator and he like pushes the button for me and he like ushers me on the elevator. Now I'm thinking he's coming with me, but no, as the elevator doors are closing, there's like a stairwell right in front of the elevator door. And as the elevator doors are closing, I'm watching this guy like sprint up the steps. So I'm like, what the fuck? What is he doing? So the elevator opens to the second floor. And there he is standing there. And I'm like, okay, okay. And he's like, okay, follow me. So he's walking me to the bathroom. And like, as I'm behind him and he's in front of me walking into this bathroom, I'm like, what's this guy going to do? Like, is he going to ask to hold it for me while I'm sitting there taking a leak? Like, what the hell is he going to do? So anyway, he opens the door and he ushers me in and he literally waits outside of the door. So I do my business. I come out and he's waiting for me, ushers me over to the elevator, pushes the button, same spiel, sprints down the steps. I'm there, walks me back to my seat, tucks me in. Meanwhile, my plate setting's all perfect. Like I just got there and I've been telling this story probably close to 8 years, 9 years now. So it was probably my first or second year anniversary. That's a 3-star Michelin experience, right? And so I kept thinking like, they don't have to do that shit. Like, they really don't. Why do they do that shit? You know, why does this guy, Will Gadaro, run this business, run this restaurant the way he runs it, right? And how, what does that say about him? And what does that say about the brand that they're creating there at 11 Madison Park and Croco, which is still a Michelin star? Like, you know, you really got to screw up to lose a Michelin star. And Will says in the book that, like, that's a big deal in the restaurant industry, like such a big deal where a chef committed suicide because he thought he was going to lose a Michelin star, kills himself, and the restaurant winds up not losing the star after all. So it was a catastrophe. And I was just like, holy shit, this is a big deal.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's a bummer to hear, but yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, those are like, that's what you work for. Right. I mean, it's like any career path, I guess it's whatever you work for, man. You know, some people play the game to play, some people play for championships.
Right. And I think, so I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, like, how am I playing the game? You know, what am I, am I setting my standards high enough? All right. And that really has me thinking as I'm reading this book. And, you know, I think very deliberately, this book is making me increase those standards even higher. You know, I'm like, not that I'm a perfectionist, I'm not, but there is a certain way I'd like things. And there's a certain way that I expect things, right? And I'm like, man, if I expect those things, then I better be doing those things too, right? I can't expect that, but not expect. I can't expect to receive all of that, but then not do any of that. Like, I feel like there's a give and take there. Like, you really have to set the example first. I don't know. I just feel like what you put out is what you get. And I've seen it in the positive and I've seen it in the negative. I've seen me do like stupid shit in the past, like, you know, especially when I was in my early 20s, and I would get that shit right back almost immediately or somewhere down the pike in the future, you know, as something as simple as like not showing up for an appointment, but not saying anything about it, just blatantly not showing up. Right. within weeks, Brett, that would happen to me. And I'd be so pissed. Like, what? You don't respect my time? Da, 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 da. And meanwhile, I just did it. I just did it a couple of weeks earlier. So
yeah.
How could that be a surprise to me?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so much, man. There's a lot of layers to this conversation. Right?
Where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I'm just sitting with them all. It's interesting. The first thing is, what I want to do is just take a step back real quick and just acknowledge. I think a thing that you're talking about, sort of tangentially, but what's really interesting to me is I'm so curious about what you've gotten from the book you're talking about so far, right? Because, yeah, maintaining a high star ranking for Michelin stars is incredibly tough. Like, earning them in the first place is
insane.
One of the hardest things to do, and then keeping it is incredibly hard. Mm-hmm. What I think is fascinating is the thing that you did naturally. If we can rewind the tape, but what's great is, I mean, beyond the fact that your review was essentially your Yelp review would be great bathrooms, 5 stars. but what's awesome is really you didn't talk about the food. You didn't talk about the price. Two things that aren't really the point. I mean, they are the point, but it's things you expect, right? So when we're talking about how, I mean, it's what I just said. It's some people play the game just to play, some people play for championships. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own definition of greatness, right? What's so interesting is you didn't say we went there to eat. You didn't say we went there to, you know, you didn't say, yeah, the food is great. You know, the decor was great. The service is great. You didn't say any specific thing. You said the exact thing that, I mean, to my understanding of it, that Michelin stars are rated on, because they don't necessarily just rate one part of the restaurant. Right. It's the experience. Mm-hmm. You said the word experience over and over and over. You said the experience was, it's one of the best experiences you've had. Mm-hmm. You went there for the experience and you talked about the experience anecdotally. Right. So you became their marketing for them, which I think is the point of that. Right. And so when, again, when you talk about the stakes there, if you lose that, that means the experience is suffering, the quality control is suffering, your grip on what defines a good experience is suffering. And if you're only looking at the food you're putting on the plate, you're ignoring everything else. If you're only looking at the menu pricing, then that's just one thing. There are $40 restaurants I've been to that have Michelin stars, right? Like that's the same. I've been to one where I think it was 500, you know, which is nuts. But yeah, like for an anniversary or something like that, of course. But you gotta do it once. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's interesting because I think that is so key when, just getting back to the real nerd shit that we're inviting everybody into these conversations. Yeah, man, look. First of all, hi everybody, welcome to my moment of insanity. No, but it's so fascinating to me because so many businesses will have that singular view instead of the whole reason why Krista and I started this thing and why you and I get along, which is like, when we talk about branding, when we talk about anything, marketing, building a business, building a company, building a reputation, yada, 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 all the stuff is that, like, what a good brand is the way you describe that restaurant, which is the experience of it. It's why the number one bit of advice I give to business owners of all sizes is like, cool. Like, what matters is consistency across all your touch points. If you're only doing great marketing, but your packaging isn't good or your distribution is difficult or it sucks or you're in the wrong places or you're aligning yourself with the wrong people, or, you know, if you have a great product, but you're not really positioning it, or you don't have a point of view, or even if you have a really novel idea, you can have a great idea and you could be first to market and you can have success for years just on that. But if you don't have an understanding of why that good idea mattered, then as soon as somebody comes along and copies that idea and does it good enough, just cheaper, just faster, just more convenient than you, or if they do the exact same thing at the exact same price point, but they have a point of view, then you're done. Then you're, you know, you're Uber. You know, like that's what it means to be that. You know, it's why a company has to evolve and figure out, okay, well, we were really creative once to get here. You know, I think companies are some of the most creative entities that we're fortunate enough to work with, as much as like we're called creatives in the industry. But, you know, it's so cool because, yeah, I mean, they have the ideas for the products. They started a business around it. They have this incredible passion, this incredible drive. Even if the motivation is money, there are other ways to make a buck in the world.
Well, you talk about motivation, right? So Will starts the book off about how him and his partner at the time, they get invited to the James Beard Award in London. James Beard Award, for those folks that don't know what it is, it's a very
best beard. Whoever has the best beard in the world. I've been
very
nominated.
very prestigious award. And it could literally catapult your success as a restaurant, right? So they get invited and they're thinking that they might be top 10, top 20, right? Out of 50. Right? And this is like the best restaurant in the world we're talking about. This is what you're going to be awarded, right? They come in dead fucking last. They are number 50. And like, as excited as they were like, I can't believe we're the last one, right, on that list. And that fired them up. And they were like, we will be number one. We're not going to be number 2, 5, 10. We're going to be number one eventually. And that was the start. That is what really drove them. They were like, because they flew home from London feeling, we're number 50, right? And it depends how you look at it too, right? People would be like, oh my God, that's amazing that you made the 50 top, right? But that was not okay for them. And so they went in and they said, we are going to be number one. Another drive of theirs was that they had gotten 2 stars from the New York Times and they were pushing to get, and that was really disappointing for them, right? And it takes about a year to earn from critics and reviews to earn another star. So when they got the 2 stars, they were like, fuck, it's going to take us another year at minimum to get us another star. So like, we got to start now. And their goal was to get 4. Like that's the goal, right? So they knew that they were like at a minimum 2 years out to see that, right? Fast forward, I'm not going to tell you everything in the book, but during fucking COVID. Oh, no, I'm sorry. During the 2008 recession, they get their fucking 4th star. And I'm not going to spoil how that all went down. Got to read the book, but they got their 4th star. But one of the takeaways that
today's episode brought to you by,
right? But one of the things that has really been inspiring me about this book is when unreasonable hospitality doesn't necessarily have to be expensive. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't need to be expensive. And he talks about like luxury is like getting more of something. Right. But hospitality is getting that feeling. Right. Just walking away with that feeling. I'll give you the quote now since I got the book in front of me. Like, yeah. This is,
yeah, I'm curious because I think I might have a different definition.
Yeah. But, so he says luxury means just giving more. Hospitality means being more thoughtful. Being more thoughtful. And then he explains the conversation of one of his buddies runs a huge real estate firm. So he comes and talks to these real estate agents and he was like, what do you give clients, whether they are buying or selling the last day, whether they're buying or selling a home. And they were like, oh, we put a bottle of champagne in the fridge. Like, yeah. So does everybody else. Right. So like, how do you create that experience so that it's more thoughtful? One more quick example, and then I want to get your take on this. He talks about he was like bussing a table one day and he overheard this European foretop talking about this was their last day in New York City. They were flying home. And the one thing that they forgot to do was to go buy a dirty water dog, like on the side of the street, like from one of those hot dog stands, right?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
So he heard them and was like, watch this, ran outside, ordered a hot dog from like Gus, right? Brought it back to the chef and the chef plates it, cuts it in four, plates it like a 4-star restaurant would plate it, brings it out to them and says, I couldn't help but eavesdropping on your conversation. I didn't want you to regret not getting a dirty water dog before you go home.
It's funny.
This is compliments of us. And it cost them $2. Like, and he said out of the years and years he's spent at that restaurant, he's never gotten a response from a table so surprised, so happy, so, oh my God, we're going to be talking about this for the rest of our lives, which one of the guests said, right?
Yeah.
He said, it cost me $2. I was like, whoa. I was like, that was such an awesome play.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah, man, that's a great example of, again, I'm going to show everybody on your, I'm going to prove to everybody on this podcast why I'm good at my job and bad at life. It's because, I always bring it back to business. Going back to branding, going back to advertising, going back to all of that stuff, right? Building a brand, to me, first of all, I think I like how he's differentiating what he does versus how I feel luxury can go awry. I would say real luxury is thoughtful more than excess in general. I think a lot of things claim to be luxury, but they're just excessive, you know, I would say that's more the definition. That's more the difference between opulent and luxurious, you know, opulence is, you know, a lot. Like you want to have you want to satiate somebody's greed, or not greed, but just like gluttony.
Yeah. Like a gold plated Maybach that I see driving around in the city.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like, you know, you're just putting hats on hats on hats, but really what it is what I love is like, it's thoughtfulness, it's consideration. And so there's a few things in that. First of all, like I will say that is a great example of whenever I talk to businesses or, I mean, anybody, really it's about, again, it's like a brand isn't just one thing, and a brand strategy isn't just, it's why I feel so bad for so many, like a lot of the businesses I work with are startups. Because I feel bad, like so many of them pay so much or just go through so much to get, they're sold on quote like brand strategy. But that's it's an overused term. And usually the end result of that is a really fancy design brief. It's a really fancy work order for what will ultimately just be design and not really a what a brand strategy is. What a strategy is, it's a guiding light. It's sure, it's a document of blah 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 blah, but really what it is strategy is just clarity, you know. And that's the thing I say a lot. But really what's great, what the beauty of clarity is it's how you then use it, right?
Yeah.
So the reason why what Chris and I do is small is because it's one thing to have a strong brand strategy, to have clarity, to have that understanding of, oh, this is what we do and this is why we do what we do. I understand now. It's bigger than a product, mm-hmm. and it's more than just money or growth or whatever. Yes, everybody wants those things. Of course, the thing you put out and the thing you sell, whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the same thing. Of course, every business is in business to make a profit. Even nonprofits are there to grow awareness or raise money for a different thing. Again, different goals, but ultimately the same thing is it's a business that's still a business. It's a brand is a brand is a brand. Mm-hmm. Same as a person. But like, what's great there is like, when you put that in action, then, mm-hmm. okay, great. We have this clarity. Now, what do we do with it?
Yeah.
It has the potential, and this is where so many businesses don't utilize it. It's why people undervalue brand strategy, because if all you're getting is like, here's, you know, a really one-dimensional view of who you are, you're this archetype of thing. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not going to rag on any one specific thing, but it's why personally I have strong opinions on the Jungian archetype stuff, where a lot of people will use them really one-dimensionally, the same way they might build one-dimensional characters on TV shows or pilots or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, where you need to understand who this thing is really quickly, and they can't have a lot of dimension or depth to them, and they just need to be this one-dimensional thing. Mm-hmm. You can't do that as a business because you're trying to humanize a brand. And so again, it's not just like, all right, great. You're a superhero. So your colors are going to be red and blue. Red is strength. Blue is calming, blah, 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 blah. Pseudo-psychology nonsense, mm-hmm. mumbo jumbo. That's all fake. you know,
it is,
but it is. But the whole point there is like, it's just a really fancy way to get to, all right, great. So your color palette is this, your typography is this, and your logo is going to be this because we agreed brand strategy is X, Y, Z. No, like, yeah, that stuff is born from the brand strategy, but the brand strategy should also be able to inform the way your brand speaks, the way it moves in the world, the way you approach R&D, the way you approach growth, the way you innovate product after product or offering after offering after offering. It affects distribution. It affects hiring. It affects training. Mm-hmm. It affects customer service. It affects the receipts. It affects every single part of your business, even the way that you as a leader talk about the business and you as a leader think about the business. Brand strategy affects everything. It is one in the same.
Yeah.
It is a more artful version of a business strategy when done appropriately. And yes, it guides a business and it can guide it, and it can guide it through recessions, through massive events like pandemics, political turmoil, through global growth, through all these different changes that are going to happen. You can't run from change. No. The world is going to change. Culture will always change. People will always change. Time, as we experience it, is linear. It's always going to go in one direction. Mm-hmm. And you as a business need to be ready to grow with it and adapt,
yeah.
and stay consistent throughout across all those touch points. So again, going back to the hot dog story, what does any of this have to do with that? Is what I love about it is, again, brand strategy, knowing what the point of that business is, knowing how they understand hospitality, them as a business, it's about thoughtfulness. It's about thinking about the person. It's about, okay, what is this person looking for? Versus a restaurant that might be like, all right, great. We got steak on the menu. We're going to cook a steak. It's mm-hmm. going to be delicious. Mm-hmm. No, it's like, it's listening and it's saying, okay, our whole thing is we are going to be the most thoughtful plant-based restaurant in New York. Mm-hmm. Levin Mad. Great. They wanted this thing. It's not plant-based at all. You know, again, any article I've seen on 11 Madison has been like, they're the only starred Michelin plant-based restaurant. But that's so great because, again, they listened and created an experience that they will never forget. It doesn't matter if it was on menu. It doesn't matter if it was off menu. It's not even like they're advertising. Hey, if you come here and you say you want a thing, our guy's going to run down the bodega, you know, get you what you need and you're going to be good. No. The point is thoughtfulness and training that thoughtfulness so that a chef, whether it was the person writing the book or not, mm-hmm. the point is somebody in that company understood the point of that brand enough to leave their post in the kitchen, to exit the business premises, to go get something out of their own pocket, either write it off or charge the business. Again, whatever that is, because I'm just putting this in business terms so other people listening can understand how it relates to them, mm-hmm. and bring it back as a way to not increase value. Again, that's often additive. It's because you don't just increase value by adding more to it. You do it by doing the thing you do better. And the thing they do is thoughtfulness. And they went the extra mile to be more thoughtful, to be more of what they promised, more of what they said that they were there to do. Yeah. And that to me is amazing. Yeah. I mean, again, it goes back to, what is the point of view? What are you planting your flag around? And how are you building a business then? Business brand, same thing. Mm-hmm. How are you building that brand, that relationship that you have with the world? How are you building that around that flag that you've planted in the ground?
That's it. You know? That's it. And I think that was something that they had top of mind from the beginning when they took on this project and had to make some serious decisions, especially from a training standpoint. So they had like two factions going on as far as staff goes. They had the old school fine dining, very prim, proper, buttoned up, you know, you can't, you know, remind me of the way he was describing it. Remind me of those guys that stand in front of the Buckingham Palace. That you know that they can't make any expression or acknowledge you. Like that was I'm exaggerating here, but that was one faction that was working there, and then the other faction was like millennials, the staff was very young, he mentioned, but like millennials that like didn't like that stuffiness. They loved the experience. They loved the whole vibe of the place, but they didn't care for that stuffiness. So you had the stuffy faction kind of looking at the other faction going, you're doing it all wrong. You can't put your hands on the table. You can't do that. You can't do that. And that's when Will was like, well, why? Like, is this, oh, well, it's just a fine dining rule. Well, when was that rule last reviewed and challenged?
Also, like, you know, I mean, again, it's in our industry, it's the same thing I get in trouble for as much as I can. I get in trouble for it equally. I find equal trouble and success, right? Because, mm-hmm. again, very strong opinions, Henry.
It's all right. Let it out. I love these conversations.
It's so funny. But no, it's, you know, it's the same. That exact thing to me is one-to-one for whenever people bring up best practices. Mm. You know, there's a lot of agencies in this world, especially now with social, where you're able to see analytics and data and you're able to get feedback so immediately, it's really dangerous because so many people, I mean, we live in a data where we live in a world where data is more accessible than ever. And we have more data than ever about just literally everything, you know, from people's viewing habits, people's social media habits. I mean, even the whole like website cookie nonsense, and everybody thinks like ad agencies are this big black box thing where it's like, oh, to get to that Super Bowl campaign, you had seven of the world's top psychiatrists really going deep. No, you had idiots like me making bad jokes and just, you know, going like, man, all right, well, this would be funny. I don't know. This would be fun.
Yep.
Like it's that's what does it. And so the truth is a lot of people find comfort in rules and they find comfort in like shrinking the world and their worldview and making it more understandable, even for topics that are more nuanced or have more depth or are more gray. People want black and white. They don't want gray.
No.
Because gray is harder to understand and it's a harder bar to clear. And yeah. So, yeah, when you talk about best practices and it's like, well, I should be posting between this hour and this hour and I should do this many posts a week and I should do. It's like, oh, that shit nuts. Is nonsense.
Yeah, it drives me nuts.
Yeah, like the so I love that the restaurant that has a business, again, it's all the same thing to me. So like I love that a business is saying that on their own in their field because yeah, nobody is the people who told you you had to follow these rules are you. Like as long as you're being ethical and you're literally following the law, but beyond that, just like moral, you have a good moral compass. Like, that's why I won't work with tobacco brands and stuff like that. But, you know, it's still like what you want is to be able to pave the road that you're going to travel down. You want to build that road, man. Yeah. Because the second you start looking at best practices and sort of going like, well, this, we got to do this because this is the way it's done, or this is the way someone told me I had to do it. I mean, again, then you're following something. You're following something, which the thing I say all the time, which is like, you're trying to move forward while looking backwards.
Yes.
And it's so hard to do. And eventually you're going to stumble and trip and hurt yourself.
Yes.
I
yell at my son all the time for this because he runs full steam, but looks backwards. I swear, and he's nailed a couple walls in his time.
Well,
and,
I mean,
and I'm like, well, what are you doing?
Like, yeah, it's the same reason. Like, as a business, I think it's so interesting that so many people are willing to just like sort of blindly follow best practices again because it's immediate. And because you can find comfort there of like, cool, you can get these small gains and you're pretty much guaranteed a return if you do X, Y, Z. But what that doesn't do, what nobody tells you is like, yeah, you might be able to go a little bit of distance with that. But in the long run, that's not sustainable, A, and B, it doesn't build anything, you know, because you're just doing by the numbers content or practices or whatever. Like then you're just, again, if you follow all those rules to a T and you're like, I don't understand why nobody's coming here, we did everything right, and it's like, well, because you're one of a thousand fine dining establishments.
Yes.
In New York.
That's it.
No, like that's you know, the only thing that like then is differentiating you from anybody else, or the only reason I would come to you versus someone else is A, like what your menu has on it, B, what your prices might be, or C, like if you're a block closer than the next fine dining establishment I can go
location,
to.
Yeah, location.
And not one of those three things equal the quote that you said at the top, which is, my God, this is an experience that is a thing that I want to share with my friends. Yeah. I will smile with, with my wife whenever we look back on this and reminisce. Yep. It was a life experience. That was a moment that made my life better by having gone there. And it was great. I loved it. Of course the food was good. Of course it was worth however we got there. Of course that day was great. Of course it was worth the sitter and da 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 da, da. Mm-hmm. All the stuff that you would expect. But again, like, you know, and the same thing goes whenever we talk about marketing, which is like, yeah, look, of course your content needs to be posted at a regular rate so people can follow it. Yeah. But all that stuff is conditional. Like, you're not out there chasing a trend. You're out there trying to create your own as a business. That's if you are a different entity, if you're a new thing, if you're not just toothpaste on the shelf, mm-hmm. right?
Even if you are.
Yeah. Even if you are, how are you going to be different? And why would I look at one brand versus the other and care? And so that's the whole point of, like, yeah, man, like, you're creating your own conversation. You're creating your own, like, little space. You're creating your own, fine, let's just stick to social. You're creating your own channel for content. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I need to do just regular, you know, no shit thinking of, like, yeah, I need to be somewhat regular so people know to tune in. There's no math, though. There's no perfect math because an algorithm is going to change. People's viewing habits are going to change. Mm-hmm. Just do it as regularly as you can,
yeah,
and stick to it. But what's more important is, what are you putting out there? Is it interesting? Is it consistent? Is it on brand? You know, does it tell the same story? And if all those things click, then just put it out there and your audience will grow around it. Mm-hmm. And that's how you build the road as your, like, that's how you create a path, you know, by, like, taking the machete out and, you know, hacking your way through a dense forest, you know, like, that's how you do it, man. Like, you have to chart your own course. Otherwise you're going down a well-trod road that everybody else is going down. Right. And, you know, again, like, I can follow you for a block or two, but I'm going to get bored. You know, and it's like,
that's it.
It's people ask about, like, all right, well, why? You look at TV networks. I mean, the same thing, like, just even anecdotally, a long time ago, whenever I worked with entertainment stuff, writing, you know, like, for TV or whatever, it's you look at those things, Viacom and MTV were really interesting as a brand because they were so innovative. They put out so many new types of things. They were so bold. And then at some point it became really clear that, again, it's what most companies do, which is, like, you look at the data, and now that you have more data, how you interpret that data and how you put it to use is so important. If you're just going to blindly follow it, then you can make a show and make a show and make a show and make a show and make a show until you get to a point where suddenly your network is just, it feels hollow and nothing is new and unexpected about it. Mm-hmm. And so it's why MTV as a brand struggles in 2022 versus where they were when they were, you know, quote, experimental, even when they had, like, they had weird stuff on weird shows that don't always make sense. Mm-hmm. But they were willing to try things to create culture rather than follow it. And it's like, well, people in this demographic like this and this and this, you know, it's, you know, it doesn't always work that way. Like, it doesn't like, you can, like, demographics don't read the same way. And if all you're ever doing is just, like, following, then, I mean, again, you're going to get into so much trouble.
Well, it's funny you say that because I'm seeing more and more of that on social media, and I'm so disgusted by it. And especially these DMs that I get from these fucking scam artists. Like, just it's amazing. Like, they want to sell me what everybody else is doing so I could look like everybody else. And that they're missing the point. Like, I had this guy message me yesterday. He's like, I see you put out a lot of content, and if you're looking to get more Hormozy style videos, and Hormozy is this guy, Alex Hormozy, who does these very fast paced videos with the colored subtitles, right? With the emojis in them. And this guy's hot right now. So everybody's talking about him. And if you want more of these Hormozy style, I don't want fucking what Hormozy does. Let Hormozy do Hormozy. If I wanted to be fucking Hormozy, I'd call him up myself and, right?
Like, yeah.
Drives me nuts. Totally. Drives me nuts. Well,
that's the thing. I mean, again, and that's like, it's a lot of businesses and people want that because it satisfies a creature comfort. People want safety. What really wins ultimately is an amount of fearlessness.
Yes. Courage. You
should be willing to fail.
Yes.
And as long as you're failing around a central theme or a central story, which goes back to branding and marketing and all the same stuff, then it's like, you're not going to be offensive. You know, you're not going to do stuff that's going to hurt the brand. The worst you'll be is maybe it's not as impactful as the last campaign or the next one.
Yeah.
You know, like the worst offense then is just boring, which is bad. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
The worst thing you can be is boring.
Yes.
But you know, again, so many people want so much safety that it ends up being boring.
That's it.
And that's the easiest way to be irrelevant in the world is to aim for safety.
Yeah.
To not fail. Like, yeah. Like, I mean, again, like it goes like number. And yeah, it's so interesting. It's so funny. Like, there's that meme that I love whenever I point to like demographics. It's like, when there was, I don't know how old it was, but yeah, there's like a Prince Charles and Ozzy Osbourne when they talk about memes, talk about demographics. And it's like, cool, both male, born in 1948, raised in the UK, married twice, lives in a castle, wealthy and famous. If those are your criteria, then yeah, everything, Prince Charles and Ozzy Osbourne are the same person, but those are completely different people. You know, again, they might have some weird commonality around those experiences, but you're not talking to at all the same thing. That's why it's so important to understand the type of person you're talking to.
Yes.
You know, and then what's great again, knowing why they're there. It's again, like it affected how MTV was experimental. They weren't experimental with just everything. It wasn't just, you know, Buckshot. They weren't just like closing their eyes and hoping for the best.
Right.
They were experimental with like, great, this seems like something these kids would be looking for. They knew they were talking to like, you know, people who were outside of the mainstream, who wanted, who liked comedy, who liked subversive humor, mm-hmm. who liked all this stuff. Like, again, I'm using boring words to describe just like, yeah, they wanted weirdos, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's how they got me. And then eventually I left them for Adult Swim, just like everybody else. And that's why Adult Swim won for so long,
because
they were willing to be weird when other people weren't.
Yep.
You know, and
I think that's what makes the point of differentiation right there. You know, it is just like 11 Madison Park. They weren't saying to themselves, oh, well, what's Per Se doing? Let's get as close as Per Se as we can. Per Se is another 4-star restaurant in the city, right? Let's just do everything that they're doing, because they're successful. It's the quickest way to fail, guys. But there's droves of people that buy into that strategy. And I'm like, stop it. Just stop it. It's the blind leading the blind. So take a deep breath and say there is a different way. So one of the things Will also talks about is in the book is like, find the third option. Find the third option. Cause he's like, maybe what you're proposing isn't the best. Maybe what your partner's proposing isn't the best, but there could be a third possibility that could satisfy you both. That'll be the best for who it is that you're serving. And that got me thinking too, like what is the third option? Is there a third option? What, there's gotta be a third option. Let's explore that. Cause if you start to put your focus on that, things start to show up. He was like, and then the other thing, you've heard this before, Brett, but he was like, don't focus on the person, focus on the issue. Like the person's not the problem 9 times out of 10. It's the problem's the problem. So focus on that and don't blend those two, because that's when things, you start to band-aid fix things versus getting to the real core of what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And so, I mean, we could spend another hour talking about this book. So I just want to be careful of time.
Yeah.
These were some of the big takeaways that I'm like, man, there's so many branding, just takeaways here. So highly recommend the book. Highly recommend the book.
Yeah. That third option, speaking to like flexibility and adaptability.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, what you're saying there is being open to new thinking and new ideas. Like so many people, again, they get laser focused. It's tough, especially if you're talking to business owners and you have, it's so tough. It's tough in every industry and it doesn't get easy. Like it's the thing that I battle, that I'm sure you do too, which is like, you're fighting against clarity and an idea and you're like, okay, cool. I have clarity on this thing. This is the way I can see this working. But you want to be able to work towards that goal, but you want to be adaptable to answers that help you reach that goal better. And so that's why it's interesting how you worded that. I'm so curious. I think I'm going to pick this thing up, the book. But yeah, it's only because it's what's great about the way you worded it is like, yeah, you didn't. It's not about doing it the way that you wanted to do it. It's about, okay, look. What are we here to do? Mm-hmm. Let's agree. Let's find an agreement there. And then you have a way that you want to do it. I have a way that I, you know, want to do it, or rewording that even. You have a way that you think is best. I have a way that I think is best. Let's explore what are some other ways to do this thing?
Right.
And I think that's what I, as a partner to the businesses I work with, try to do, mm-hmm. which is like, just, again, you work on keeping people open to new answers and helping raise their ability to withstand and stomach the unknown, fear, right? You're putting stuff out in the world that is new. And by definition, you will not be able to prove this. And you're doing that along with provable ways that you know where your audience is and da, 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 all that good stuff. So it's a balance. I'm not advocating for just doing blind nonsense and doing it in an irresponsible way. There needs to be a responsible place for that planned chaos.
Yes.
We were talking about earlier,
yes.
Right? You want to be able to plan for, you want to be able to have those moments of planned chaos, like at a daycare.
I don't know how those teachers do it, man. I get, you know, so
which
much
is
credit.
Like, yeah, you're gonna come in, you're gonna have you're gonna eat a snack, and then we're gonna read a story, sing a song, but then you're gonna have an hour of free play, mm-hmm. you know. And that's where, again, like that's where you can go do whatever you want in that time. And that's where putting that all the way back to the third option, staying open to new thinking and new ideas and being willing to put those out in the world and experiment. It's really just treating it more like the scientific method than saying being irresponsible or doing it just for the sake of doing something weird and, you know, or cool and awesome. It's like, yeah, knowing what you're there to do and trying different ways and different approaches, and some will work and some won't. You know, the nice thing is if you're treating it like a scientist, every now and then you're going to invent something and it's going to change the world.
Yeah.
And that's what people hope to do with products, but that's what they hope to do with culture. And that's why I do what I do, man. Yeah. You're here to shape the world, even in small ways that make somebody laugh or make somebody think.
That's it.
You know, and then what was the last point after the third option?
I think that was it. That's what
You said something else after that. That was really good. You said there was third option, but yeah, focus on
the problem, not the person.
Yeah. Yeah. That to me, it's such an interesting thing. I want to be mindful too. So sorry for,
no.
But yeah, what I love about that is that's a great way to think about the phrase, the customer is always right. Meaning so many people will just say that because it's a saying and customers say it and businesses say it. And you know, what it means is your customers run the business. No, what it means in this context. What I love about putting that thought behind that quote is it means they're going to tell you what they want. People tell you what they want. They might not do it in words. They might do it with actions. Mm-hmm. They might do it with behavior. They might do it with their pocketbook. They might do it with the way they vote. They might do it with the way they talk about you online or the way they don't, which is even worse. Mm-hmm. You know, the customer, if they're complaining about a thing, dig into that and be like, okay, well, what is not working here? Or if you as a business go like, man, I wish I could get more butts in seats. Let's say it is a restaurant. I want to get more butts in seats, or I want, you know, people to have dinner and drinks more often because I make more off of the drinks or more off the pots. Great. How can you? Okay. That's what you want then. You're not going to do that just by promoting it. Yeah. That'll change a little bit, but what business change are you willing to make in order to satisfy that want from them? Mm-hmm. You know, what are you doing to help the person? And that goes back to how you defined hospitality, which is thoughtfulness, and why I define that as luxury, because whenever I've worked on luxury brands or premium brands, that's the beauty of them, is they put more thought, care, and consideration into people. And even a cheap thing can be really thoughtful. You know, it's why I said
the freaking hot dog.
Yeah, you know, like Michelin stars don't have to be just for crazy expensive places.
No.
You know, like what's great is you can go there and have a great experience where somebody just thinks about, okay, who's the kind of person coming here and how can I make every different touch point better? Mm-hmm. Even if it's how can I make coming into the restaurant better? How can I make the takeout boxes better? How can I make the menu experience better, all the way through. If they say they got to go to the bathroom, how is that making good on what they want here?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And for them, the answer was, get you your own personal bodyguard.
But, right.
But yeah, you know, it goes back to all that stuff of like, yeah, you solve the problem, which is the reverse of the inverse rather, but it's the exact same thing. Of what I mean when I say like, yeah, like you're not, whenever you're marketing, you're speaking to the customer benefit. You're speaking to the thing that you're speaking to, the emotional outcome or the way this product makes you feel or what it does for your life. Like the way that this offering helps a person rather than just, again, you're a certain person squarely within our demographic. This is priced right up your alley. It's like, okay, great. Thanks. Bye. You know, versus like when we talk about customer benefit, it's like, hey, this thing is going to make your life better. This thing, it's Friday whenever we're recording this. This thing is going to make Saturday really good. Mm-hmm. If you get this done today, tomorrow is going to be the best day.
Yeah.
You're going to have a great day with your kids tomorrow, your family tomorrow. You're going to have the best morning. You're going to wake up tomorrow happier because you did this thing tonight. And now all of a sudden you're like, oh, I want to be happier tomorrow.
Exactly.
Versus like, huh, that thing sounds interesting.
You know, it's okay. It's funny you say that. So my wife, when we first had our son, my wife struggled with her time. She gave it all up and she didn't have those boundaries. She didn't carve out time for herself, whether it's just taking a walk or getting a massage or any of that. She went ham for like 2 years straight and it started to really catch up to her. As much as I was helping and doing the best I could, in the new experience, it was really gaining on her. And finally I told her, I said, just ask, you know, I can anticipate the need, but if you need a timeout, then just call it and I got you. Right. So long story short, she started getting better at that. And over time, she started creating more of a boundary for herself. So now she drops my son off from school and she has 30 or 40 minutes before she starts her day. She goes on this long walk by the lake, listens to the podcast of her choice, and then she comes home and she's ready to go. And I've seen such a major change in her demeanor over, I would say, this last summer. She's been doing it for over a year now, maybe even more, but I see such a change in her demeanor because she's taking that time to do that stuff that makes her day right, makes it a great day. And I think that's something that this is the perfect place to kind of wrap up is to, you know, as you can
boundaries.
Yeah. Well and just think to yourself, like everything that we spoke about today, you know, make sure that you're doing what makes you happy. And if you have a mission and purpose in life, whether it's business related or not, are you doing the next right thing to move that mission and purpose forward? Stop looking at what everybody else does. Yeah, it's good to get inspiration. And Brett, well, he always tells me, go look at different industries and don't just stay planted in this little microcosm of your industry. Go out and explore and see what else is going to inspire you. And I do that. And, you know, and it's broadened my views and horizons so much. And I tell Brett all the time, I thank him for that. And that's something that I want you guys to take away with today is, you know, how are you being unreasonable in a good way with your life to push it forward, to wake up the next day and say, wow, yesterday kicked major ass in a good way. And I'm that much closer to where I want to be. Life, business, et cetera, today. And I think you got to start thinking, I don't want to say you have to do anything, but I invite you, I challenge you to start thinking bigger. And based on our conversation today, what are some takeaways that you could start applying in your life today, in your business today, whether you own a business or you work for a business? How can you stand out by doing what you love to do, but not following someone else's lead there?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. The question I would ask too, on top of that, would just be like, yeah. If you know, well, the first question is always, why are you doing this? But
right.
Once you're able to answer that question, beyond money, beyond fame, everybody wants those two things. Why are you here? When it's all said and done, how will this business have changed the world, however big or small? Mm-hmm. Once you know that, what are you willing to do different? What are you willing to do that nobody else is? And then how will you do that now?
That's it.
Right?
That's it. That's it.
All it takes.
So we'll see you next week. Well, you'll hear us next week. But, you know, in between, you know how to get me on Instagram. I'm going to be hanging out there a lot more. So Henry Kaminsky Jr. at on Instagram, you'll find me real quick. Shoot me a DM, screenshot this episode and tell us what your favorite takeaway was. And Brett, are you on Instagram?
You know, I lurk.
He's a lurker.
No, it's, you know, honestly, man, social media is one of those tough things where I do it as my day job for brands and businesses. So it's like,
but never for yourself.
You know, I'm a weirdo, man. I love to unplug. And again, I take my own advice. I try to get inspiration outside of the world I live in. So that's why, you know, you can find me watching TV, you can find me playing video games, walking outside. No, if you want to get in touch with me, you can reach out to Henry. You can reach out to the show. You know, I'm around. I'm always available. you know, B&G isn't hard to
find. Brett, what I want to do is I like this format. I think it was a great conversation, and we're killing two birds with one stone here and getting you guys in, you know, as lurkers, if you will, on our conversations on Friday. And I think you guys, if you continue to listen and spend time with us, you're going to pick up things that you're not going to learn from a social media post. You're not going to learn from a book. You're going to learn it from two guys in the industry for a really long time, and you're going to get our point of views. And there's value to that, you know, whether you take it all or you take one little bit of it.
10 ways to 10x your ROI.
Yeah, forget it. Yeah, forget it. Shoot me in the face now. So, all right, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode. Appreciate all of you. Take care.